to India and Ireland, round Africa and back again. We don't really need to know just where we'll go. Maybe Canada, then to Brazil, then through the Alpine foothills. All I really want to know is can we go? Oh baby, can we go? Round and around the globe.
Welcome to Take Me With You, episode 102. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Cheryl. We are two well-traveled people who want to go everywhere.
But that's not going to happen. Instead, we'll travel vicariously by inviting a guest to share their unique travel stories with us.
Today, we're talking to Kyle. Kyle is a teacher in the Seattle area and actually one of Ryan's coworkers. Welcome, Kyle.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
Oh, man. Before we actually were pushing record, you started talking about normally during the summers when you're not working that you're staying in Germany, and I was already getting really jealous until I remember that it's COVID times and none of that is happening.
Yeah, not visiting anywhere. I'm staying at my house this summer. It's a little bit different.
So did you grow up over there? Because you said your parents are in Germany?
Yeah, so my dad worked for Boeing when I was growing up. And so when I was, I think, like 7, he was transferred over to the Netherlands for a year. Hmm. And then in 1995, he was transferred over to Bavaria, so near Munich, for 5 years. And then a few years ago, he was back over there for 2.5 or 3 years. So when I was growing up, I lived over in the Netherlands and Germany. And then the past few summers, I was able to go visit them when they were living in Germany and I was living over here.
Nice. Oh, that's so cool. That's a fun way to do it. I like it.
And where would you rate your level of fluency with German?
I can read it pretty well. I can understand it when people are talking to me. Speaking it has gone downhill a lot since I lived there because I've had no ways to really practice. I used to be able to speak it pretty well. Now, not so much. Now I sound like maybe like a 3-year-old.
Well, I sound like a 0-year-old, so it's still progress. And then, okay, here comes my ignorance again. In the Netherlands, they speak Dutch?
Dutch, yes.
Did you learn any Dutch?
I did. I remembered none of it.
Okay. Well, Kyle, we have 3 questions that we ask all of our guests. So the first one is, why do you travel?
So I've kind of always traveled. Okay, I was born in Seattle. My parents were not born in Seattle. My mom is from Ohio. My dad's from Michigan. And so pretty much every summer growing up, we would go visit family in Ohio, visit my dad's family in Michigan or Colorado or California. His family moved all over the place. so that was always kind of what we did in the summers. And then when my family moved over to Europe when I was a kid, about once a month, sometimes more, we would get in the car and drive to other places because I don't think my parents had ever been to Europe at that point. So they, of course, wanted to see everywhere. They didn't know if that was going to be their only chance or not. So we went with my brother and I would travel with them all over the place. And then, the other reason really is I like meeting people from other places and talking with them. And that's probably one of my favorite things to do now when I travel.
Love that.
And how do you do that? Because different people have different methods, right? So how do you like to meet people and talk with them when you're in another country or another culture?
All sorts of ways. Sometimes it's as easy as like going to a restaurant or a bar and just talking to like my waitress or my bartender. I have been at dinner and I have just started talking to the people like in the table across from me when I'm on my own, especially. When I was in Australia and I was coming back from the Great Barrier Reef, it was just people on my boat or just people staying in the same hotel as me. I'm not really afraid to go up and start just talking to people. And so that helps quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly valuable trait, especially when traveling. So awesome. Second question, what type of traveler are you?
I'm the kind of traveler who stresses a lot of my more organized friends out when I travel. I don't really plan when I go travel. And a lot of that, I think, is because of how I grew up. Again, my parents kind of had like a list of things they wanted to see in places we were going. And so the days were pretty organized and I didn't really like that. And then as an adult, when I would travel with friends or something, I've traveled with people who pretty much had the itinerary like down to like the minute. And that was way too stressful for me. So usually when I travel, I'll try to find or try to come up with maybe a number of things that I want to do. And as long as I do that, I'm happy. And then the rest, I'll just kind of like explore, wander around, see what happens. And when I tell friends this, they'll tell me that I'm stressing them out. Like I don't have my plans like all like laid up in a row.
That makes a lot of sense. So do you sometimes not have accommodations or do you always like to have your accommodations?
I try to get accommodations and like any traveling things that I'm going to do. So for example, when I went to Ireland, like I had my hotels for all but 2 days when I was there. And then I had like my transportation figured out. So I knew how I was going to get somewhere and how I was going to get back. And then the rest was just kind of, I'll stop into the tourist shop or well, not the tourist shop, the information kiosk or whatever it is. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And see what they've got going on, or I'll, you know, take recommendations from people that I've met and ask them what they recommend and try doing that. And I found that that's allowed me to see places I wouldn't necessarily have gone otherwise. So, yeah, because I find cool. If I stick to a schedule or if I'm on like a very strict schedule, I miss out some of those things.
Interesting. I'm so convinced now that we need our podcast's own form of like a dating service, but not dating, like matching people up with their travel buddies. Because I swear those exact words you've said, we've had some guests say, like, I stress out my friends, but I don't want to miss out on what might come up. And then we have other people that are like, no, I make the most of it, so I plan this thing. And I want to like find travel partners for everybody now.
Would you say that you have found people that you travel well with, or do you prefer to be more independent because that gives you that flexibility?
It kind of depends. I have found people that I travel really well with. And some of the people that I travel well with, it's been a case of like, okay, we're at the hotel now, see you at dinner, and then we both do our own things.
Yeah.
The reason I travel alone really is because the places that I want to go tend to be places that other people don't want to go, or they can't afford to go there because they're not able to travel over the summer or as long as I am. So yeah. And there are definitely people that I travel with not as well, or I don't travel as well with. Again, those are the people who are making like the very detailed lists where everything, like all the fun is budgeted. Here's our 15 minutes of that. Here's our 10 minutes of lunch. Here's our, you know, 5 minutes of walking from place to place.
The fun is budgeted.
Yep.
Yep. I've had that before.
Unlimited fun, not budgeted fun. So last question, and then we'll dive into your travel story. What is your number one travel tip?
So the one that became pretty clear to me on my last trip, always know where your passport is.
I feel like there's a story behind that, Kyle.
So I was at the airport, and I fell asleep. I had woken up early. I had a long layover. And so I was just kind of hanging out. I stood up and my passport fell out of my backpack because I have it in one of those like passport cases where you keep around your neck usually.
Yeah.
And so usually I'll just put that in my backpack and know where it is and just pull it out when it's time to get on the plane and then, you know, not have to deal with it. So I did that. And then I woke up from my nap and went to my gate and my passport wasn't there. And
oh, geez.
I was very panicked. And luckily a cleaner at the airport had found it, turned it into lost and found. So there was maybe like 25 minutes where I thought I was going to have to live in the airport forever and was never going to leave, like that Tom Hanks movie. But like since then, it's like, okay, keep the passport around your neck so you know where it is at all time. There are other other travel tips that are, I think, important, but that has just become the most important one to me since then.
I mean, that is a make or break on if you can travel. So
exactly right.
That's very good.
Yeah. Well, and even I think, of course, that's, you know, internationally, of course, you need a passport. But even domestically, if you're flying a lot, there, you know, I think is it later this year in 2020?
I think so.
Yeah.
Where at least for that they're going to increase whatever the identification is. And some states have driver's licenses that do that and some that don't. And so it's, yeah, just having whatever that identification is, and a passport can work for pretty much any of those.
And so. I've had friends too, who I was supposed to meet up with one of my friends in London when she was on a work trip, and she got to the airport and her passport was missing and she had to turn around and fly back home. So again, that's the,
yikes.
Another that, you know, just kind of drills it into your mind. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Crazy. What trip are you going to tell us about today, Kyle?
I'm going to tell you about my trip last year where I went to Egypt.
Ooh.
That's awesome.
Go ahead. Why don't you give us sort of an overview of maybe why you picked Egypt and where kind of you went, and then hit some of the key cool experiences that you had while you were there.
Sure. So when I was in elementary school, and I'm sure this is probably true for you, because I know it's true for a lot of people, learned a lot about Egypt. Like, I think we would like learn how to spell our name in hieroglyphics or, you know, make mummies and wrap them in toilet paper or whatever. So I've always had Egypt in my mind. One of my favorite TV shows that I watch is, it was on PBS, it's called Globe Trekker, which is about people just traveling to different countries and like sharing their journeys. And of course I watched the Egypt one and that looks super cool. I've read Egyptian mythology. I have students from Egypt. Mm-hmm. And it's just a place that I've always wanted to go. And so kind of on a whim last year when I was booking my trip, I looked at the price from Berlin, because I was visiting family in Berlin, to Egypt, saw that it was affordable, decided to book a ticket to Cairo and then figure out what I was going to do when I was there. And then what I quickly learned was that traveling to Egypt is much more overwhelming than it is traveling to somewhere else. Cairo is a very big city. I think it's one of like the 10 biggest cities in the world.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's the Cairo Giza area. And so I kind of knew going in what I want to do. I want to go to see the pyramids and the Sphinx, of course. Mm-hmm. I want to go to the Library of Alexandria. Mm. And I want to ride a boat on the Nile. And those were kind of the three things that I wanted to do. When I was looking up all the information, what was difficult was everybody was saying something different. Like, there was one website I found where somebody was saying, you should only stay at 5-star hotels. You should make sure you take like a tour group you're with a group the entire time so that people can protect you. Other people were saying, yeah, stay wherever you want. It's fine. Just get the hotel to book your taxi for you. Or like, somebody said, oh, I said Airbnb, and then you just got Uber everywhere. So that was very overwhelming for me. And I found I was looking at Lonely Planet, and there was a tour guide agency where instead of like having like booked package tours, which because I was there, I had chosen my dates before I was looking up like accommodations or places to stay. So I found a tour guide company that pretty much you told them what you wanted to do and then they would come up with a package for you. Yeah. So it was super cool. So it wasn't like, here's like the thing you're going to do. I was talking to the person and the person lives in America now, but he used to work in Egypt in the tourism industry over there. And I just kind of said, yeah, I want to go see, you know, the Sphinx and the pyramids. I want to go see the Library of Alexandria and I want to see, I want to ride a boat in the Nile. And he was able to come up with a package for me where I was in Cairo. And I went, so I spent some time in Cairo, Sphinx and the Pyramids, the Egyptian Museum. I got to ride, do a sunset cruise of the Nile in Cairo.
Ooh.
I went to the Khan Al Khalili Market, which is a souk, like a Middle Eastern market. I was able to go to, I'll think of it. I was able to go to a live performance like at an Egyptian cultural center.
Cool.
Where there was like live singing and dancing. I was able to go up to Alexandria where I was able to see the library. There were some other ruins in the museum up there I was able to see. And then he was able to find room in my schedule to go down to Luxor for a day. So just a day trip to Luxor. And I was able to go to the Valley of the Kings and the Temple of Queen Hatshepsut and Karnak when I was down there as well. And so that was kind of what I did when I was in Egypt. Those were the highlights.
Well, okay. So I've got Google Maps up here trying to keep. So it looks like Cairo is quite a ways down from the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
So it's like not near the end of the Nile, but then Alexandria is up on the Mediterranean.
Yeah, Alexandria is like the vacation town where everybody in Egypt goes during the summer because it's by the water. It's there's cooler breezes when you're there. It's very hot in Egypt in the summer. So surprise. So a lot of people will go up to Alexandria for the summer because it's right by the water. There's like the ruins of the old lighthouse of Alexandria are up there as well. And then, yeah, Cairo is right on the Nile, and as is Luxor.
But Luxor is significantly farther south.
Yep. I took plane there in the morning. I woke up early. I think I woke up at like 4 a.m, something ridiculous like that. got on the first plane in the morning down there and then took the last plane back at night and then checked back into my hotel.
Wow. That's cool.
So yeah, when I say it was there for a day, it was like a day.
I flew
in and out because the drive would have been ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah. I'm plugging. It looks like, it's almost an 8.5 hour drive from Cairo to Luxor.
Oh yeah.
Versus
so
like a hour long plane ride.
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. So tell us about some of the things you did in Cairo. What was it like? What was the city? What was the vibe?
The city was overwhelming. I have probably never been somewhere as overwhelming as that.
I got
out of the air. So it's very crowded, as I mentioned before. But kind of my first experience was you got out of the airport. I had somebody who was there waiting for me to help me through customs and everything. And I only had a carry-on, so I didn't have to wait for baggage. And there was a driver waiting for me to take me to the hotel. And you leave the airport and you get on the road. And it's like, I want to say it's a 3-lane road. It might be a 4-lane road. Either way, it was treated more like a 5 or 6-lane road.
Mm.
So there were cars and the cars were swerving in and out from each other. And there were people just walking across the highway. Bright lights everywhere, billboards. It was, and you know, I had obviously just landed on the plane. I was a little groggy. So yeah, there was a lot to see and I didn't know where to look. And then, you know, there was the person from the tour company giving me information like, here's the Nile, here's this. What Arabic words do you know? I know none. But and then so like and then I was staying in a suburb, or not a suburb, a neighborhood called Zamalek, which is an island in the middle of the Nile.
Ooh, interesting. That sounds cool.
Yeah, and it's I mean, you can drive there by car, obviously. Like one day when I was just kind of wandering around the area, there's a bridge you can walk like across to get to the rest of Cairo. So it's not totally isolated. But it's kind of like the young hip area. I mean, I'm doing that with quotey fingers. but it's kind of like, it was very crowded. We passed hookah bars where people were just like smoking hookah out on the street. There were quite a few parks. Just people were out, and it's a semi-dry country. Like most people don't drink because alcohol is forbidden if you are Muslim. But because there are so many tourists, of course, there are some places where they will serve alcohol. But most of the people you saw were just out walking around. Because it's cooler at night, obviously, you're in the desert. A lot of people were just out at night, and that's when they were out seeing friends, visiting with other people. So when I'm first driving in to just to get to my hotel, and there are cars packed next to each other, everybody's honking, everybody's driving really fast. It was just a little overwhelming. It definitely a culture shock, I would say. Not bad or anything, and like I got used to it pretty quickly. Like I was able to sleep fine at night and everything, but it was just, this is very different from anywhere that I've ever been in my life. Which is one of the things that I like about traveling, right? Like this is totally different from anything I've ever seen. This is so cool, but it's also going to take me a little bit of time to get used to it. Like by the next day, it was when we were driving and like to the pyramids, it was totally fine. So, but yeah, so I landed at night, went right to the hotel, fell asleep. The next day I woke up and I had a guide who was with me the entire time I was in Cairo. His name was Mohammed. And the first place we went was not actually Giza, like the Great Pyramids. We went to the Step Pyramid of Saqqara, which is the first pyramid that was ever built.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a step pyramid. It looks like, you know, pieces like stacked on top of each other, not like the triangle that we kind of associate or that I was thinking of.
Okay, so that's what you mean by step pyramid, is it's like literal steps.
It's obviously they're like bigger, like you can't walk up it. Maybe you can. Yeah. I don't know.
But like if you built it with Lego or something like
kind
that.
Kind of, yeah. Kind of like they built it with Lego. And so that was the very first pyramid that was ever built. And so we went to see some of the tombs that were around there. And I learned a little bit about some of the tombs. But then the interesting thing about the Step Pyramid, aside from it being the first, is it's also the only pyramid that's totally solid inside. Most pyramids have like the burial chambers
right
inside. Here they're buried all underground, and when I was there, they were not open to the public, and I think the plan is to make them open to the public. My guide luckily had actually been down in the tunnels, which is very rare because most guides haven't. So he was able to tell me what it was like inside, and basically there's, as he explained it, there are tunnels that will go and then they'll branch off, and then those tunnels will branch off, and then those tunnels will branch off. So I don't know that they've even totally finished exploring all the tunnels.
And they run underneath the pyramid as well as around it?
I believe so. I believe it's underneath and around a little bit.
There. Okay.
Yeah, because there were still people there digging and excavating when I was there. There's also, people trying to sell me stuff the entire time that I was there. Like, here, do you want to buy our book about the pyramids? No. And my guide told me pretty quickly, you just say no, because otherwise they will ask you. And then after that, then we went to the Great Pyramids and the Sphinx, and they're all in one complex. And so you go up, and there's actually like 9 pyramids in there. There's like the 3 great pyramids, and then there's like pyramids for the wives of the pharaohs who were in them. And so I got to go inside one of the pyramids, and when I was there, and they changed the law while I was there, but when I was first there, you were not allowed to take pictures inside of the tombs unless you bought a photography pass. But that did not count for like inside of the actual pyramid itself. So like I had to leave my camera with my guide when I went into the pyramid up to the burial chamber of the pharaoh who was buried in there. And I can't remember his name off the top of my head. So you walk in, and the guards, the temple guards, the pyramid guards, and there are guards everywhere. Like you have to go through metal detectors. You have put your bags through things. So it felt very safe the entire time. Like at no time did I ever feel like I was in danger. But I walked in and the guard said, "Oh, do you have a camera?" And I said, "No." And then he said, "Hey, do you have a cell phone?" And I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Do you want me to take a picture of you with your cell phone inside of the pyramid?" And that's kind of what the experience was most of the time. You were not allowed to take pictures here, but here, if you tip us, we'll take pictures of you. It's totally fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And so I do have a picture of me inside of the pyramid. And then when I went up the burial chamber, there were tons of people just taking pictures, whatever. So it's kind of a common thing, but because Egypt is not a wealthy country, tipping is kind of expected when you're there. So you tip everybody for everything. If people take your pictures, you give them a tip. I tipped my guide every day, tipped my driver every day. It was just kind of expected, and it was okay. I knew that going in, so it was totally fine. It wasn't a surprise, but it was still just like seeing people. Like one of the tombs I was in at the very beginning of the day, and I can't remember the name of the tomb, but the guard walked me down and was showing me around. Said, "Hey, get in the sarcophagus, or where the body was, where the coffin was." And he's like, "Just get in. Now that you're in, let me take your picture." "Okay, now that I've taken your picture, please pay me some money." which was fine. That was the very first time, so it was like, I don't know what is going on. After that, it was pretty much, if I didn't want to, I could say no. I got word that was the correct thing to do. So it was totally fine. And then we went around, and because when you see the pyramids, they're very close to the city. Like you can pretty much see Cairo anywhere you look from the pyramids. There's one spot, which is where you see all the pictures of the pyramids pretty much taken from, where you can see them all and the city's not really in the background.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that because I picture them being in the middle of nowhere, which it makes more sense that they're not.
Absolutely not.
I picture them just being like, you have to go so far into this desert to find
they're like,
the pyramid.
They're right in the city pretty much.
Really?
It's crazy. Yeah. I had this, like I had read that they weren't, but still in my mind until I actually saw it, I was thinking, okay, they're further away. I thought they would be further away than they actually were. But no, like, so the Sphinx is in the same pyramid. There's a Pizza Hut right behind the Sphinx.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This is so interesting.
Hilarious.
Because we've talked a bit on this podcast about our perceptions of things. Our classic example, actually, this is more about size of how big you think something is compared to how it actually is. So the Mona Lisa, have you seen
Lisa? Oh, it's tiny.
Yeah. And so that's kind of, and then we also have like the redwoods on the other end of that scale, that they're much bigger than a picture can capture. And this isn't necessarily about that, but it kind of is in like the perceived feeling of a place or atmosphere of a place.
Totally.
And I think, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like the Colosseum in Rome or things like that too, that you expect something to be a certain way, and then you get there and there's all the tourism piece of it that you didn't expect, and then the location can be really different, or just like it's modernized around it. Just because that one thing is ancient doesn't mean the city is ancient anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things I actually heard was one of the best places to see the pyramids is from the roof of the Pizza Hut. So
did you then go to the roof of the Pizza Hut?
I did not go inside the Pizza Hut. So I cannot confirm that this is, whether this is true or not. but where I heard that was they do a light show. And so you've got to pay, like every night they have a pyramid light show. And so you've got to pay to go to the pyramid for the light show. But what you can also do is go inside the Pizza Hut and walk to the top and watch it for free from there. While eating Pizza Hut, of course.
So I'm curious then, Kyle, kind of like Cheryl was saying with kind of the Mona Lisa and the Redwoods. And I have said multiple times that I was super disappointed with the Mona Lisa and not impressed at all. Mm-hmm. How did the pyramids and the Sphinx, since those were one of those three things that you for sure wanted to see, how did actually seeing them and going to them compare to your expectations of them?
It was unbelievable. It was, I would still say, because the pyramids have been around for a long time. Like, they are very old. Yeah. And just to see them, to see the architecture, to learn about, like, to learn about them. The reason the pyramids look the way they look is they used to be totally smooth on the outside, but then people came and like took the granite to build their houses. Like the Sphinx was a little bit smaller than I thought it would be, but still it was still very cool to see that, because these are things that I have wanted to see my entire life, pretty much, or for as long as I can remember at least. And so yeah, they were right in the middle of the city. Yes, there was a Pizza Hut behind it. Yes, there was there were people trying to sell you camel rides. Or as my guide said, it's free to get on the camel, but you've got to pay to get off. yeah, but it's still like seeing that, standing there, like knowing there were people thousands of years ago, I don't know how many years ago, and there used to be water up to here, and they would sail their boats up into here. And
I don't think I knew that.
I didn't know that either until I went there. Yeah, like the water, like the canals would end like right around where the Sphinx was, and that's how
like
they
like naturally, or that they had irrigated out there.
So I'm not sure about that. Okay. I want to say naturally. I could be totally wrong. So
interesting. That's still interesting. I've always, you know, pictured it dusty.
Because when they were building the pyramids, the granite came up from way down, I think from down in Luxor, and they would float it up on the river, and then they would float down the other way. And that's kind of how they were able to get this granite that is not found in Cairo all the way up to there.
Interesting.
And then also part of that, which was something that I had never heard of until I was there, was the sunboat. So there's a small museum in that same complex called the Sunboat Museum. And what happened was they found the pieces of an old boat. It was either in the pyramids or like right next to like the pyramids, or in like one of the lesser pyramids, but it's a very old boat. And they believe that it helped carry people to the land of the dead. Like people could write. And so that's what they think it was. And so they never figured out how to put it together. They think they figured out how it was originally put together, but they're not totally sure. And they talk about in that museum, we tried one way and we were nearly done. And then we realized, no, we've got extra pieces left over, so this can't be right. So they had to take it apart and start again.
Oh my goodness. It's like IKEA furniture.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like IKEA.
Yeah, right. And so that was super cool to see too, because it's very old boat that they found, and that I think some of the stuff they found on was stuff that they expected people like the kings to take with them to the land of the dead. So that was super cool as well.
And then Alexandria, you went up there and you mentioned the Library of Alexandria, which I've heard of, but I thought that it burned down or something.
The original Library of Alexandria has burned down long time ago. They are not sure where the original library actually was.
Oh, really?
They have no idea where it is. Nothing has survived intact from the original library. There is one scroll that is now on microfiche,
mm-hmm.
That you can see digitally when you go there. But when they decided to build this new library, they built it where they think the original library was, but they're not sure if that's actually where it was.
Okay.
And it looks like it's right on the water there.
Yeah, it's right near the water, which is, super cool. And, like, if you look at the designs, if you look at the front, there's how they it was a Norwegian architecture firm that designed it. And there are pieces of, like, language. There's no sentences, no phrases, but there's, like, letters, and there's Viking runes, and there are Arabic, and there's Chinese and Japanese characters. And some that people had never even heard of before, or like that most people aren't familiar with. And there's just pieces there. And the idea was they want to show that this is a place that captures knowledge from all over the world. And it was super cool. And then you go inside and you can take a tour. And so you can see the library and find out here's the different floors, and each floor is a different area of the library. And I can't remember what's what. And a lot of like people who are studying Egyptology will go in there and like look at different things. But then underneath the library, there's a museum, and there's multiple different exhibits. So there's like, here's a museum or an exhibit about modern African art, or there was something by the guy who designed, I believe it was the sets, but an Egyptian man who worked on the film Cleopatra with Elizabeth Taylor. And so like the designs of the place he built, one of the things he built. There was there was an exhibit about Anwar Sadat, who was the president of Egypt. And they've got stuff from like, oh, here's the clothes he was wearing when he was assassinated, which was...
Wow.
Or like, here's his toothbrush, or like, so it was very detailed. And that was super cool too, because I had no idea. I just thought like, okay, here's this library, they've built it back up, but they're doing a lot to make it a place where it's a library, but it's also a place that stores a lot of knowledge, kind of like the original Library of Alexandria way back in the day, because the original Library of Alexandria was considered the center of all knowledge. They kept all the learning. And so that's why it was so devastating when it burned down, because so much was lost.
Yeah. And Alexandria looks quite a lot smaller than Cairo. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
It was just as crowded because, again, that's where everybody was going for a summer vacation. But... it was smaller.
Did you notice a difference in the either temperature or humidity, or just kind of the overall weather there? Was it more pleasant than in Cairo?
It was a little bit cooler because it was right by the water. Especially where I was right by the water.
Nice.
Yeah, the hotel that they checked me into when I was there was super fancy. Like, I felt like a prince when I walked in. I was like, oh, this is my room? For real? I've never seen anywhere this nice in my life.
That's cool.
It was very nice. I felt underdressed because I didn't have closed-toed shoes with me. And there were people, like, in their, like, suit and ties and everything.
Ooh.
And I was like, okay. Well, there we go. They had a discotheque there. They had like four or five different restaurants you could go to. It was a nice hotel.
It is funny sometimes when you have someone else make travel accommodations for you, and you're like, oh, this is fancy. Oh, is this how people travel sometimes?
This is much nicer than anywhere I've ever been. Yeah. it was only there for a night, so it was fine, but it was still like, okay. This is how the other half lives. I get it. One of my favorite stories there too is I look very obviously non-Egyptian. Like, it's very clear if you look at me that I am not a person who is from Egypt. and so I left my hotel and I was kind of walking around and I was looking for somewhere to eat. And at one point I was walking past these two boys and they were probably about 8, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger. And they were kind of, I could see them like staring at me. And as they walked past, one of them reached out and poked me. and it wasn't like, at no point did I feel unsafe or anything. It was just, I started laughing right away. I was like, okay, they may have never seen another person as pale as me before. And they just wanted to make sure that I was real. I don't know.
So you were talking about that Alexandria people like to kind of do their summer vacation there. Is that just locals that are doing that, or people from other countries are also coming there to
do their holiday? I believe it's just people in Egypt who go travel there for holiday. There's pretty much two places. There is Alexandria, and there's another place by the, I want to say it's the Red Sea or the Red Desert, where people from that side of the country go for vacation, but it's pretty much either they go to Alexandria or this other place, because it's cooler, than the rest of Egypt, because it's further north, it's by the water. It's still really hot. I still drink a lot of water, but it is definitely a little cooler, and there's more of a breeze and everything.
Nice. Okay, I want to hear about your day trip. Where was that to again?
Luxor.
Luxor. So what's in Luxor? What was intriguing about it to you?
So Luxor is famous for the Valley of the Kings. There's the Valley of the Kings, the Valley of the Queens, and the Valley of the Nobles. I only went to the Valley of the Kings. The Valley of the Kings is famous because so many kings from, and I can't remember what period it was, but from one period in time were buried there. That's where they found King Tutankhamun's tomb. And the one thing that every guide I had made clear was the reason that everybody knows about King Tut is not because he was a great king or anything. He was only a ruler for like 9 months or something. It's because it was the first tomb that was found totally intact. Hadn't been robbed by anybody. When I was at the Egyptian Museum, I got to go into the King Tut exhibit, where they had everything, and it was just so much gold and like all of the things that were wrapped up with his, like in the linens with his mummy. The Valley of the Kings. And so the day that I went to Luxor was actually the days the law changed, where you were now allowed to bring in your phone and take pictures for free. Totally. You didn't have to pay for a photography pass unless you wanted to use your camera. When I was like, well, I'm not going to pay extra if I can just use my phone.
So, yeah.
So that was August 1st when that rule changed. And so I was able to go into some of the different tombs. And what's different about the tombs in the Valley of the Kings is that they're not pyramids, first of all. They're like literally like tombs that you go into. For the most part, they started being built as soon as the person was crowned. And so the bigger the tomb, the longer that the person reigned as pharaoh.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, I think King Tut ruled for like 9 months or something. So they had from the beginning of his coronation till like after the mummification process was finished. So his is much smaller than, say, King Ramses IV. Whoever's. And then the other thing is, in the tombs in Cairo, a lot of like the paint was gone. You couldn't see what color things were originally painted. There was like a lot of it had been bleached by the sun. Whereas in Luxor, in the Valley of the Kings, you could still see the original colors of the paint.
Oh,
so that was super cool as well. Yeah.
Nice.
And so you could see, you could better see the art on the wall. Like, here's them giving their, or waving the feather when they're in the land of the dead to see if they will make it into the afterlife. Here's them greeting Osiris. Here's XYZ happening. So there was a lot of like cool stuff like that happening. But then the thing that I was most excited to see in Alexandria was the Temple of Queen Hatshepsut. She is the pharaoh that I knew the most about coming into Egypt, and that was something that I didn't think I was going to be able to see originally. And then when this excursion was planned and I found out I was going to Luxor, I was able to ask to see her temple as well. And if you don't know who Queen Hatshepsut is, she was a woman who ruled Egypt, and usually it was men who ruled, like... But she, after her husband died, when her stepson was still too young, she pretty much took over and then just justified why she was able to be the ruler. And she, and her stepson was fine with it. He was a general, like in her army, and she like conquered a lot of places. She brought a lot of prosperity to Egypt at the time. And then right after she died, suddenly like, or not right after she died, I think it was like right as her stepson was dying, a lot of her statues were destroyed. And they, so they kind of tried to erase her from history, but they did it kind of haphazardly. So it wasn't like every place was destroyed. But quite a lot were, and so as they have found more information, like when they're digging and doing their archaeology, they've learned more about her and just kind of what she had to do, and so they're reassessing their theories as they find more information.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, so it's super cool, and her temple is beautiful, and the reason, when I was a kid... we were only allowed to play educational computer games. And so, and I can't remember which game it was. Not one that I've ever been able to remember the name of since then. This was like mid 90s when so much educational software for, for kids. One of the places you could go and find out information about was the Temple of Queen Hatshepsut. And so that's why I knew her. And that's why I wanted to go to that. The other really cool thing about Luxor was the person who pretty much created my trip for me. Like I said, he used to live in Egypt. And so one of his friends lived down in Luxor. So I was able to have like a lunch, like a private lunch at this person's house.
Oh, cool.
In Luxor, where he like made lunch for me. And I got to meet his dad and his, some of his nieces and nephews were there, and was just able to talk with him. And so that was super cool too, because like I said, I like talking to locals, and this was a way that I was like in his house eating like food that they would normally make. And so that was super cool as well.
That sounds so fun. Oh man, that's very cool.
So yeah, something that I wouldn't have been able to do had I planned this all out on my own.
Yeah.
Like in no ways.
So as a non-planner, having someone else book this trip for you, and then it sounds like you had a guide, a significant amount of the time?
I had a guide in every city that I went to, not the same guide. So like there was, because obviously guides know more about places where they spend more time.
Sure.
And obviously they've all been, like to be a guide in Egypt, you have to have a degree in Egyptology. So they've all
really?
Yes.
That's cool.
So they all obviously have this degree, but for them to like come travel with me would have been an extra expense. For them. So I had a different guide with me in every city that I went to. And that was so great, because if I had just wandered around blind in some of these places, first of all, there were places I wouldn't have made it to at all. And then there were places where a lot of the history that I have told you, I wouldn't have learned. Like, this is information I'm getting from my guides. Like, probably would not have gone to the Step Pyramids of Saqqara. I'd heard about them, but even when I was there, if I had just gone there on my own and just kind of walked around and looked at it, I said, okay, cool, here's a picture. It was much more meaningful to have a guide with me in all of the places that I went, because they could explain things to me or answer questions. When I was wandering around the neighborhood where my hotel was, I found the statue of this woman. I had no idea who she was. I was able to show her picture to my guide, who goes, oh, she's a very famous Egyptian singer. She is considered the fourth pyramid of Egypt. So it was great. Yeah, it was fantastic. I also had a driver who drove me around everywhere, and that again felt super fancy, but he was a really interesting person as well to talk to.
So how did that play into your desire for spontaneity and just kind of going what you find? Did you still have those opportunities?
I did, and part of it was I was able to tell him, like, here's what I want to do, and so things were able to be planned around that. But there was also, it wasn't like every minute was scheduled. It was definitely like, okay, you're on your own from this time to this time. Here are some suggestions we have for places to eat or places to go shopping. But you can do whatever you want. Just be back at the hotel by this time or be awake at this time so we can take you wherever. So I definitely did still have free time as well. It wasn't all like planned out down to the minute.
I think that's
good to know that that even exists.
Exactly.
I think for a lot of people, it's this idea of either you're with a tour group and it's all scheduled, or you're completely on your own and have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Like, this was a good middle ground.
That's exactly right. And I had never, like I said, I just found this place on like the Lonely Planet website when I was looking at ideas for what tour groups were doing, so I could maybe like schedule it on my own. And it was just super helpful to have it done for me, or like have parts of it taken care of for me and take me to places that were super cool that I'm really glad that I went to, but that I wouldn't have been able, or I wouldn't have thought of to go on my own, or wouldn't have known about to on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So you were sharing at the start that there's kind of these different ideas out there as far as safety goes in Egypt and what that looks like for someone who's planning their trip. And obviously there's a huge piece of that of like what is real safety versus like perceived safety when you're traveling, because different people are also just going to feel a different level of comfort when they're traveling.
Absolutely.
But what was your experience? Like, are you happy that you had a local driver and a local tour guide in addition to the information just to kind of keep you going where you need to go? And did that add a level of safety for you, or did you feel pretty safe even when you were just out there walking around?
I felt pretty safe just walking around. Kind of the jokey answer that I give is the only time that I ever felt in danger was when I was trying to cross the street, because there are no, that I saw no crosswalks. Where I was, for the most part, the traffic lights were more suggestions than anything else. Like, so it was kind of like I had to find, and people would be walking across the street. When I was on the freeway from Cairo to Alexandria, there were people like in horse carts or like just on the freeway. Yeah, very, very different. Like, not something that you see every day. And there were people walking across the street on that too. So, and I've talked to students of mine when I said, oh yes, the crossing the road was scary. They said, yeah, you just got to do it. And that's kind of the philosophy that they have. It's like, you just go, and it's not like playing Frogger. They're just walking straight across. So I pretty much, when I wanted to cross the road, I would find somebody else who was waiting to cross, and then I would follow them.
Smart.
But the driver and the guide, that offered a level of convenience, I think, that wouldn't have been there anyway. Because you, outside of like some of the big places, like outside of the Egyptian Museum, for example, there are people who are waiting there who will happily guide you. Like, if you, I mean, again, you would pay them. You can take a taxi pretty much anywhere you want to go. But having that all taken care of for me, not having to find something on my own, it just took away some of the stress that I would have had otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for sharing with us about this trip to Egypt. It's so interesting. And we have a couple follow-up questions for you. So the first one is based on the title of our show, Take Me With You. Okay. If you could take us with you to just one thing on this whole trip, what would it be and why?
Just one. Okay. Yes. I would probably say the Nile cruise. Like, if I went back to Egypt, and I would happily go back, I don't necessarily need to go. If I was by myself, I wouldn't need to go to the pyramids again. I wouldn't necessarily need to even stay in Cairo again. What I would want to do is take like a longer, like 4 or 5 day Nile cruise where you go from, and there's different ways you can do that. And when I was just on my sunset cruise, I took a felucca, which is similar to the kind of boat that they would have used back in like the days of Cleopatra.
Oh, wow.
So there's no motor. It's just all based on the wind. Obviously these winds are made of wood and like a little sturdier than the ones that were made out of papyrus, but riding on that boat just around Cairo was so relaxing. And even though you're in the middle of this huge city, you couldn't really hear any cars. You could, I mean, see the hotel, see things that were happening on the sides, but it was so peaceful. And I would love to be able to take like a longer cruise, not just like at sunset. They do one from Abu Simbel, which is even further south than Luxor, all the way up from to Luxor. And that's like the main cruise way, or vice versa, like from Luxor to Abu Simbel. And so that's if I could take people with me, that's what I would take them with me to do. I would happily go back to any of the places that I was, but if I had to go again, that is what would be my number one priority.
Very cool. And this next question is not quite as exciting with our COVID times. So it's either what is your next trip, or if you don't have one, what do you hope your next trip will be?
So my next trip, the trip that I had scheduled for the summer that I then had to cancel, but I'm hoping I can still do next summer. I was going to go to Tanzania and Kenya to climb Mount Kilimanjaro and then go on a safari in Kenya afterwards.
Nice. That's so cool. Ryan and I have not been, but our podcast has been to both Tanzania and Kenya. So I feel like we're more familiar with those countries than a lot of other African countries because of that, actually. So,
yeah,
they sound great.
I did a project in sixth grade where we had to choose an African country, and my partner and I got Tanzania. So I have wanted to go there ever since sixth or seventh grade, whenever we did that project. And Kilimanjaro has been something I've wanted to do for just as long. And it was kind of the plan this summer was, you know, I've been wanting to do that. Why wait? Why not just do it now? So obviously the reason I'm not doing it now is COVID.
It's a good reason to wait.
I agree. So the hope is that travel will be up and running again next year. The other next big trip that I have planned is family reunion. We were also supposed to do that this year in Michigan. That's not happening, so it's pushed to next year, and hopefully that will also still be on. If I can't go to Africa, I'm happy to go to Michigan and see my family, my family as well. It's not the same thing, but.
And do you have any travel questions for us?
What are your next trips? Or what are the next trips that you hope to go on?
I technically have a trip booked. I have tickets.
We'll see.
I have tickets for February. During our midwinter break to go back down to LA to visit my sister.
Oh, fun.
Because I was back there this year and we all got sick. And so we determined because, and there were other things that also happened. It was just not the trip that we had wanted it to be. And so we decided we were going to do a do-over trip. And so it's tentatively scheduled for February. We'll see if it happens.
Right.
But I figured, you know what? You can, like, all of the airlines have the flexible, you know, stuff. So I figured I'll just buy it. And then if it doesn't work, I will exchange it for something else because, right. You know, we'll do what we need to do. So that's mine. Cheryl?
I don't have anything. And I don't even know what it would be. And I think at this point, so I've had two trips canceled in less than the last year, one for COVID reasons and one for different reasons. And so, and I get my hopes up a lot with anything in the future, but definitely with travel. And so at this point, I don't have anything planned and I don't know if I want to because I don't want to cancel another trip right now. And so I think we're just, you know, we're doing camping and local drives and things like that. And then I think once I know the coast is clear and we have the budget, I'm going to plan something awesome. But for now, just kind of sitting tight.
Cheryl's going to travel around the world is what she's going to do. Because she'll be sick and tired from being stuck and not traveling. She's just going to go for 6 weeks.
She's going to keep going.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
Oh, man.
All right. We're going to go ahead and transition to the last segment of our podcast called Wish You Were Here. During this section, each of the three of us is going to highlight a travel attraction from the different places that we've been. It's kind of like a little snapshot on a postcard of a really cool thing. We'd say, hey, wish you were here. This is really cool. So, Kyle, what would you like to do for your wish you were here?
So my wish you were here was two things, but they're related. So I hope it counts.
Sure.
So when I lived in Germany, I lived there on the 10th anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down. And so that's always kind of, and we moved there, I mean, about 5 years after it came down. So when we were originally living in Germany, it was right after that. So when I was in Berlin a few years ago, and then last year as well, I went back. There is, first of all, the East Side Gallery, which is just the longest stretch of the Berlin Wall that's still standing. And there is all this art over it, and it's really beautiful. And then at the very end is the Wall Museum, where they go over the history of how Germany was divided into East Germany and West Germany, the history of the wall, everything that went, like all the politics kind of surrounding that and what was going on there. And it was super interesting. It is one of the only museums that I've been to where I cried afterwards. While I was there, because a lot of it was still, it happened like in our lifetime. A lot of it was still going on. Even when I was born, like this was happening. People were still dying and, you know, stuck there. And also they give you a free piece of the Berlin Wall. So
wait, what?
They give you a free piece of the Berlin Wall. It's just a little tiny chunk, but they will give you a piece of the Berlin Wall to take home with you.
So is this like chocolate samples where you try to find the biggest one that's like less of a sample and more of a full piece?
So there are plenty of kiosk stands around there where you can try to pick out your biggest one. Here they give you like a little plastic baggie. They're already made with just like a little piece, teeny tiny, like about the size of like a pebble you would find outside. That's part of the Berlin Wall. So.
Well, those sound like great places to visit.
Yeah, those are great. Cheryl, what would you like to do for your wish you were here?
So I would like to share about Brennan's Wave in Missoula, Montana. I recently went on a road trip with my husband and stepson, and we went to Missoula, and it was great. I loved it. And we stayed in their little old downtown area, and it's right on the river. And there is a natural wave in the river where people can surf. And so in
the river?
I did not know this was a thing. And I think it is because since then I saw footage of river surfing somewhere else in the world. But
they have it in Munich.
Really?
Yeah, in the Englischer Gardens, they have a place where there's a bunch of people who you just walk through and there's people surfing. So I've definitely seen river surfing before.
Yeah, I think just like growing up in Washington, you know, you go surfing in the ocean. And so it was really interesting being in a landlocked state, but surfing. But it's so fun because there's this cute little park right next to it. Little city park, and there's a hill, and you can just like watch the surfers out on the river. So if you're into surfing, it'd be funny to say that you have surfed in Montana, but if you're not, it's a fun place to go and hang out and watch surfers. So yeah,
awesome.
How about you, Ryan?
Well, for mine, this is actually something that comes from my trip last February that we were just kind of talking about, and it's one in Disneyland, which I've been avoiding recording this one because, at least as of right now when we're recording, and it's still August for us when we're recording, and Disneyland is still closed. Disney World is open, although I don't know if it's going to stay open, but it might. But Disneyland is still closed and no sign of it opening anytime soon. But at some point in the future, it probably will. And if you have a chance to go, you're going to be proud of me, Cheryl. This is a restaurant tip. Wish you were
Yay!
Here. So this is the Jolly Holiday Bakery. And it's, first of all, I love it just because it's the Jolly Holiday from Mary Poppins, which yes. I love that movie. It's so good. And it's wonderful. And I walked past it a bunch of times because it's, I don't know Disneyland super well, but it's near the, I don't even know what you call it, that circle area where you can kind of go off on the spokes to the different lands.
Main Street Plaza.
There you go. That's it. Mm-hmm. Main Street Plaza. And so anytime you're walking from one land to another, oftentimes you walk through there and walk past it. And it was always busy all day long. There were like people there. And I think they do character meals where I'm sure Mary Poppins comes by and things like that. But it always looked, you know, busy. And then the second day that I was there, I was there at night, and I was there in the evening, which was awesome. And I had to get I wanted a place for dinner, and I walked by, and it was not empty, but there was no line out the door. There were not a lot of people there. So I actually did it for dinner. And nice. It was really, really pleasant because, again, not a huge line. I mean, it was like a sandwich, and some people feel like sandwiches are just lunch. And that's fine if you want to do that. But I don't mind a sandwich anytime, especially if it's warm. And so went in, ordered my sandwich, and then I could sit in sort of the outside seating and just people watch. And again, because it's around that hub, you can see a lot of people kind of walking around. You can see the castle, and it's lit at night. And it was just a really pleasant way to just sit and rest and still see things, but not feel like you have to run and do things. And also a way to kind of get to a place that was pretty popular when it was less busy. So that's the Jolly fantastic. Holiday Bakery, but for dinner.
I have never eaten there.
Never
actually,
even heard of it.
Although, I mean, I've walked past it a million times, and the little penguin stained glass are adorable. Yep. So yeah, I think that's some of my favorite Disneyland moments is when you're just sitting and just enjoying the atmosphere and everything. Really
well,
fun.
You mean like on a ride? Like those moments?
That's awesome. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, Kyle has been wonderful and shared with us a bunch of pictures from his trip, and we will go ahead and post those on our social media account. So if you would, it would be great for you to follow us. We are at TMWI Podcast. That's at TMWI for Take Me With You Podcast. We are on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
You can also email us at timwepodcasts@gmail.com. Send us guest suggestions or topics we should cover, or share about a time when you felt underdressed in a hotel.
You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 406-763-8699. Or if it's easier to remember, that's 406-POD-TIMWI. We would love it if you would rate and review our podcast to tell others what you think, subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode, and share about this episode on social media so other people can hear Kyle's cool Egypt stories.
As always, thank you to Beth Reed Miller for the awesome artwork. You can check out more of Beth's artwork at Beth is Something. And thank you to Erica Corbin for the use of her song Round the Globe. You can listen to Erica's music wherever music is sold or streamed.
Kyle, it was great having you on our podcast. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yay.
That's all we got. So until next time, remember to take me with you.
Take me with you.
Take me with you.
Can we get a sailboat chasing down the sunset as we float round and round the globe? Salty air and balmy nights, guided only by the lights above and light little love. All the world is out there waiting to explore, and all our troubles here want them to be.